Hi, this is Joe Levine with a podcast introduction to Chapter 4 for Teachers. This chapter begins with a mix of earth science, physics, and geography. Some of you may wonder what that stuff is doing in a biology book, so I want to explain why it's here and how you can use it. We start by explaining how differential distribution of solar energy across the globe produces rising and falling air masses. That moving air, together with Earth's rotation, generates the global wind and current patterns that distribute heat and moisture around the globe. The thing to remember is that the entire system is powered by heat. This reinforces the big idea that relationships between matter and energy are central to the interconnectedness of organisms and their environments. It also establishes a conceptual foundation for two important topics. First, this approach leads naturally into an explanation of how winds, currents, and geographic features together produce the patterns of temperature and rainfall that shape biomes. Then, when we introduce quantitative climate diagrams for each biome, you can emphasize the importance of temperature and rainfall in determining the distribution of plant and animal life. This provides your lessons about biomes with a strong conceptual basis instead of one based on just memorization. Second, once students understand how heat retained in the biosphere affects local environmental conditions, they are prepared for a detailed look later on at global warming and possible effects of global climate change. Now, I admit that some of this material is so global that it can seem abstract to students, but there are several things you can do to make it more concrete. For example, you can point out that the Gulf Stream carries roughly 30 million tons of water every second. That's 30 times the volume of all the world's rivers combined. And all that water carries lots of heat. Where does it carry it? Northwards along our east coast and then eastward across the North Atlantic. So what does that mean? Well, you can show students how this heat makes a real difference in climate. Have students locate Labrador and Great Britain on a map. Point out that they are both on the same latitude, way up north. Not surprisingly, Labrador is bitterly cold. But Cornwall in Britain is warm enough for palm trees to grow, thanks to some of that heat from the Gulf Stream. Of course, you can mention the exaggerated storyline of the film The Day After Tomorrow, in which the sudden end of this heat-carrying conveyor belt due to global warming produces global havoc. There are other important points here. First, we need to dispel any misconceptions about whether the greenhouse effect is real. As part of that discussion, you can compare Earth with our nearest neighbors in the solar system. On Venus, one step closer to the Sun, daytime temperatures hover near 480 degrees centigrade. That's over 900 degrees Fahrenheit, which is hot enough to melt lead. One step further out in the solar system, on Mars, temperatures bounce up and down more than 150 degrees centigrade, which is about 270 degrees Fahrenheit, between noon and midnight. Every night, Mars temperatures plummet to a frigid minus 128 degrees centigrade on the planet's dark side. Yet Earth's average surface temperature is a very comfortable 15 degrees C, around 59 degrees Fahrenheit, and our extremes are nowhere near those on our nearest neighbors. What keeps our climate so constant? The workings of our planetary greenhouse. Ever since life evolved more than 3 billion years ago, Earth's average temperature has never dropped below 5 degrees centigrade or risen above 25 degrees centigrade. That's pretty remarkable, because our sun's heat output is now 30% higher than it was back then. Why has all this added solar energy not roasted us in our own juices? Because the concentration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere has changed over time, altering the heat-trapping power of that global greenhouse. Here's how. Early on, the atmosphere had roughly 1,000 times as much carbon dioxide as it does today. The powerful greenhouse effect of all that CO2 kept Earth warm, even though the sun was much weaker. Over millions of years, as the sun grew warmer, more and more carbon dioxide was pulled out of the atmosphere. The resulting drop in greenhouse activity allowed more heat to escape. Somehow, and scientists don't agree exactly on how, the decrease in greenhouse effect paralleled the rise in solar output, so planetary temperatures remain nearly the same. But what pulled all that carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere? And where did it all end up? Matter can't be destroyed, so that carbon had to be stored someplace. As it turns out, life had a lot to do with it. Primary producers took up carbon dioxide through photosynthesis. Then, producers and consumers together both made carbon into carbohydrates, bones, and carbonate shells. In the ocean, carbonate skeletons of single-celled organisms ended up as carbonate rocks. Another batch of carbon ended up in buried fossil fuels, such as coal, oil, and natural gas. And a surprising amount is locked up in peat deposits buried beneath permafrost in the Arctic. As all this carbon was tucked away over time, the concentration of CO2 in the atmosphere fell to modern-day levels of roughly 0.03%. This leads to a vital take-home message. Most people think of climate as a set of strictly physical factors. This impression is reinforced by state standards that stress different biotic and abiotic environmental factors. Now, that separation may be useful when designing multiple-choice tests, but it doesn't describe how the biosphere actually works. We've just seen that even something as apparently abiotic as planetary temperature is actually affected by the actions of living organisms. Why is this so important? Because humans are organisms, and our activities can affect local and global environments. What I'm working up to, of course, is a set of important scientific questions. Is Earth getting warmer? What effects might warming have on local temperature, rainfall, and other factors that affect agriculture? And why is Earth getting warmer? Is human activity changing the distribution of greenhouse gases between the atmosphere and other reservoirs? There's an overwhelming global scientific consensus that Earth is getting warmer. There's also an overwhelming consensus that human activity is contributing, at least in part, to that warming. That's the biggest reason why this chapter's information on climate and its effects is so important. It prepares students to understand climate change when it is discussed later in Chapter 6.